Welcome to episode 33 of Forest Focus. I'm your host, Paul Wade, with the Regional Public Affairs and Communications Office. Springtime is defined as an early or flourishing stage of development. And after a wildfire damages a landscape, we sometimes see teams of people replanting trees within the burn scar during the early part of the year. Jamie Henricks helps explain reforestation efforts in a very special place in the forest.
This raking and digging tells us that we're in a soundscape of reforestation. We're also in the territory of giant sequoias, Sequoia dendrum giganteum, towering trees that grow naturally only in a narrow 60-mile band of the western slopes of the Sierra Nevada mountains in California. Although they have evolved to be wildfire resistant, they have been perishing from today's high-severity wildfires. All but five of the 36 groves on National Forest System lands have burned in recent fires. The largest giant sequoias in these groves were thousands of years old and will take just as long to fully replace. This is why the U.S. Forest Service took emergency action to reduce hazardous vegetation in giant sequoia groves within national forests to protect those that remain. But for the groves that did burn, like this one here, a reforestation effort has taken root. Welcome to episode 2 of Echoes from the Understory. I'm Jamie Henricks. One of the reasons I work for the Forest Service is because I'm fascinated by forest health, what it means, why it matters, and how it is secured. I also find that going to the forest is restorative. It gives me time and space to reflect on the things I need for my own well-being. Audio gives us boots-on-the-ground connections with our forests, where we can internally reflect. And that is what this series is all about. By immersing ourselves in the soundtrack of forest health, we encounter echoes of ourselves in the understory. During this forest visit, we follow a Forest Service silviculturist into a post-fire landscape. This expert who establishes and cares for forest trees shows us where a high-severity fire killed many trees, even fire-adapted, towering giant sequoias. This is a heavy loss, but as we learn about reforestation and post-fire landscapes, we also find a portrait of recovery, which invites us to hope for our own unhurried healing. Let's meet our guide.
My name is Ramiro Rojas. I've been a silviculturist for 32 years. I started my career on the Sierra National Forest as a silviculturist and was there for just shy of 30 years. And then moved to the regional office as assistant regional silviculturist in Region 5.
Silviculture is not a term many of us run into in daily life, but it can be understood as the art and science of growing and caring for forest trees.
A silviculturist is a forester who specializes in the management of vegetation to achieve the objectives of the landowner. What I really enjoy is working through the complexities of achieving objectives. So how to provide habitat for wildlife, how to reduce the fuels, how to grow trees for timber production, how to provide safe vegetation around campgrounds. It's a very thoughtful process. Today, we came out to the Sequoia National Forest on the Western Divide District to look at their post-fire reforestation efforts. We're close to the Trail of 100 Giants, a little higher than I thought, 6,100 feet.
We're also standing where the 2020 Castle Fire burned. A charcoaled spire stands within view, the burned remains of what was once an evergreen giant sequoia. You'd need at least half a dozen people holding hands to hug this tree at its base. The top of the tree, now leafless and blackened, towers above, almost requiring a bend of the body along with the neck to take in its full height. This is a moonscape here, a term often used to describe a landscape that has burned at high severity. Wildfire is a natural part of California's ecosystem, but not all wildfires are good fires. It all depends on the fire's severity, which is driven by weather conditions, topography, and the amount of vegetation that is present during the fire. High severity fire is the kind we want to avoid because it kills a high percentage of trees and causes extensive soil exposure. Ramiro describes the landscape we are seeing here in those terms.
Post-fire, high severity, probably somewhere around 90% mortality. We're 2 years past the fire, so we've started to see some vegetation come back in. There's bare clover, there's some herbaceous material, and that's about it. And by this summer, this bare clover, which covers maybe 10% of the ground, will be covering about 75% of the ground. That much cover in bare clover will rob the soil of moisture and rob the seedlings of moisture. So the forest has plans to control this bare clover. So that's what we see here.
We'll learn more about this bare clover a bit later, but first, Ramiro will help us dive a bit deeper into reforestation. It turns out it is not just replanting trees, but a choreography of activities.
It's a process, a series of steps that results in the establishment of trees that persist.
With low or moderate severity fires, trees may grow back on their own, a process called natural regeneration. But with high severity fires, few, if any, green trees remain as a seed source. And the seeds on the forest floor are often non-viable, which means they are unable to develop because they essentially cooked in the extreme heat of that kind of wildfire. Giant sequoias have serotonous cones, meaning they require fire or high summer temperatures to open and release their seed. They are one of the few trees in the Sierra Nevada region that has this quality. We can see a few scattered giant sequoia seedlings here, but not many. This visible fact that even this species that has evolved with fire are not regrowing naturally here in sufficient numbers emphasizes just how severe the fire burned in this area.
We plant, we artificially regenerate in areas where we don't expect natural regeneration to come. And it's just good stewardship to reestablish trees in the face of these large-scale wildfires.
There are other steps involved in reforestation. Depending on the location and circumstances, these steps occur before, during, and after replanting. Removing dead trees is one important step.
There's several reasons why you want to remove dead trees from areas you want to plant. One is that you're going to have people there over several years, and as those trees decay, they become more and more hazardous to those people. The other is, as time goes on, those trees will fall to the ground and accumulate and be part of the surface fuels that will contribute towards the next fire. And in order to create resilient and resistant forests for when the next fire comes, you have to maintain low fuels on the surface. If you don't have low fuels, it really limits your ability to introduce prescribed fire. It really increases the risk of loss of all that effort it takes to establish those trees to the next fire. And so from the point of safety and from the point of ensuring that the trees will persist over a long time so that they grow into the habitat we want or the timber we want or the recreation that we want, it's important to have low fuels.
To add to the complexities, there is a trickiness to the timing when planting in the wake of a high severity fire. And it boils down to the seedling's access to water.
At some point, rain stops, and usually it stops by the mid to end of May. So then it's got June, July, August, September, October, 5 months. The little seedling's got to put roots down faster than the soil is drying out. It's racing this wave of dryness that's coming down, right? So here's the top of the soil, and here's the water, and it's being drained, it's being drained. Meanwhile, the little roots are growing down, growing down, growing down, and trying to find more moisture. If what you have is a bunch of other straws sucking water, it can't outgrow how fast it is drying. It can't grow roots that fast. And it's being robbed of the moisture that it does have available to it. And so what this is trying to do is get rid of some of these straws that are sucking water so that little seedling can make it through the summer.
This returns us to the bear clover Ramiro told us about a bit earlier.
By this summer, this bear clover, which covers maybe 10% of the ground, will be covering about 75% of the ground. That much cover in bear clover will rob the soil of moisture and rob the seedlings of moisture.
Bear clover is thought of by many, especially silviculturists, as mountain misery. This low-growing shrub with a fern-like leaf structure has sticky resin, making it highly flammable. It has a polarizing aroma, too, sometimes described as a cocktail of camphor and sage. You either love it or you hate it. Although a native species in the Sierra Nevada mountains that can prevent erosion and create a buffer between young trees as they grow, in post-fire landscapes that burned at high severity, bear clover quickly covers entire hillsides. Its roots reach down over 6 feet deep, devouring the moisture tree seedlings need. This is why bear clover can be thought of, as Ramiro put it,
straws that are sucking water.
In addition to removing vegetation within a 5-foot radius of seedlings to protect them from these competing straws, the Forest Service and partners, in this case American Forests, take steps to shelter the seedlings from other environmental factors.
This is called a Vexar tubing. It's a plastic tubing. It's about 1.5 feet tall. Keep things from eating it, provide a little shade. It has holes in it. It can also provide insulation. And they've done quite a bit of it here.
Another slice of the reforestation pie is monitoring, both immediately following a planting and in the years that follow. Part of that entails digging around a few seedlings to ensure their roots are well planted, taking root, and doing so in the right direction. In particular, silviculturists keep an eye out for J-rooting or U-rooting. This is where roots curve to the side or upward, which indicates deeper holes are needed in that particular patch of ground.
That was okay.
It's going straight down like it's supposed to.
This reforestation effort on the Sequoia National Forest is an example of the Replant Act in action.
The Replant Act expanded the use of the reforestation trust funds, which the Forest Service has access to accomplish reforestation, increased the amount available to the National Forest from that fund, and it directed us to reestablish forests following disturbances that occurred prior to 2022 and get that done in 10 years.
The reforestation of these acres cannot be achieved without partners. In this case, the Sequoia National Forest, American Forests, and contractors worked together to add over 200,000 conifer seedlings, including giant sequoia, ponderosa pine, Jeffrey pine, sugar pine, and white fir. With collaboration and partnership like this one, we can help the seedlings of today grow into tomorrow's resilient forests. Learning about reforestation gives us a new framework to apply to the damaging events we personally experience. Much like this burned landscape, there is no edit undo to erase painful things that burn through our lives. What has happened leaves us changed, but we too have hope for recovery. There may be few green trees on this portion of the Sequoia National Forest right now, but it is already on the path to restoration. This is seen in the efforts of the Forest Service and partners to prepare the ground for seedlings to take root, to plant the next generation, and then to monitor the stages of their growth. If we were able to jump to the future and then use a time lapse of the ecosystem's recovery, we'd see that we are even now standing witness to healing in motion. We may feel a kind of kinship with this landscape where green trees are absent. Our life's events sometimes take what was once vibrant and transforms it into ash. Some of these disturbances may even have happened quite some time ago, and we still feel barren of new growth. Since some aspects of our vitality have not yet been restored, we fear they may never return. And when we find ourselves within this internal valley of lost hope, let's recall to mind what we now know about the process of reforestation. It is an unhurried but steady healing already in motion. If it helps, here are some lines in rhyme to reflect a bit further. In this charred moonscape, there is a sobering stillness. The subtle perfume of ash acts as an olfactory echo of a high-intensity wildfire. Each tree is a leafless spire, even the giant sequoia, a monarch, the largest of its kind, adapted to fire and towering above, is torched, burned from ground to crown. Our gaze sways up and down, trying to imagine the flame length and the temperature that engulfed such a tree. We can see here how vegetative density is a key driver of giant sequoia mortality. We also find an unexpected commonality, a kinship with this burn scar, a landscape so radically changed by wildfire, cloaked in the dregs of devastation, it seems to be beyond the reach of resurgence. So too with our own experience of disturbance, withered in the wake of an emotional burn, with our prior vitality erased, with our inner pillars changed to charred spires, we feel like ashes of a once was and little more. But resilience can have an encore. Silvic culture teaches us this. This art and science of growing trees, it shows us that debris removal, planting, and monitoring allows growth to emerge as a steady unfolding. But this is a slow process of beholding, and as is the case with all forms of restoration, what returns is altered, but it can be hardier. Within the echoes of this understory, we are reminded to have patient hope for healing.
This episode was produced by me, Jamie Henricks. Theme music is from Pixabay. Keep your eyes and ears out for the next episode of Echoes from the Understory.
Another great focus on the forest, Jamie. Thanks to Ramiro for helping to fill our show and explain what a silviculturalist does. It's pretty crazy to hear how much is thought about and considered when trying to bring a forest back to life. For more information on sequoias, the plan to protect them, and the people leading the way, just check out all the helpful links on the show's description page. Thanks for listening, and if you're interested in sharing or listening to more episodes, search Forest Focus Podcast or look for us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you have questions or suggestions for a show, email us at sm.fs.r5ffpodcast@usda.gov. Until next time, enjoy your public lands. Please remember to recreate responsibly, know before you go, and learn what you can do to prevent wildfires. Take care. This podcast is sponsored by the U.S. Department of Agriculture, Forest Service, and the USDA is an equal opportunity provider, employer, and lender.